6. Pyotr Stepanovich went first to Kirillov's. He found him, as usual, alone, and at the moment practicing gymnastics, that is, standing with his legs apart, brandishing his arms above his head in a peculiar way. On the floor lay a ball. The tea stood cold on the table, not cleared since breakfast. Pyotr Stepanovich stood for a minute on the threshold. "You are very anxious about your health, it seems," he said in a loud and cheerful voice, going into the room. "What a jolly ball, though! Phew! How it bounces! Is that for gymnastics, too?" Kirillov put on his coat. "Yes, that's for the good of my health, too," he muttered dryly. "Sit down. I'm only here for a minute. Still, I'll sit down. Health is all very well, but I've come to remind you of our agreement. The appointed time is approaching, in a certain sense," he concluded awkwardly. "What agreement?" "How can you ask?" Pyotr Stepanovich was startled and even dismayed. "It's not an agreement and not an obligation. I have not bound myself in any way. It's a mistake on your part." "I say, what's this you're doing?" Pyotr Stepanovich jumped up. "What I choose." "What do you choose?" "The same as before." "How am I to understand that? Does that mean that you are in the same mind?" "Yes. Only there's no agreement and never has been, and I have not bound myself in any way. I could do as I like, and I can still do as I like." Kirillov explained himself curtly and contemptuously. "I agree, I agree. Be as free as you like if you don't change your mind." Pyotr Stepanovich sat down again with a satisfied air. "You are angry over a word. You've become very irritable of late. That's why I've avoided coming to see you. I was quite sure, though, you would be loyal." "I dislike you very much, but you can be perfectly sure, though I don't regard it as loyalty and disloyalty." "But do you know," Pyotr Stepanovich was startled again, "we must talk things over thoroughly again so as not to get in a muddle. The business needs accuracy, and you keep giving me such shocks. Will you let me speak?" "Speak!" snapped Kirillov, looking away. "You made up your mind long ago to take your life. I mean, you had the idea in your mind. Is that the right expression? Is there any mistake about that?"
"I have the same idea still."
"Excellent. Take note that no one has forced it on you."
"Rather not. What nonsense you talk!"
"I dare say I express it very stupidly. Of course, it would be very stupid to force anybody to it. I'll go on. You were a member of the society before its organization was changed, and confessed it to one of the members."
"I didn't confess it. I simply said so."
"Quite so. And it would be absurd to confess such a thing."
"What a confession.
You simply said so.
Excellent."
"No, it's not excellent, for you are being tedious. I am not obliged to give you any account of myself, and you can't understand my ideas. I want to put an end to my life, because that's my idea. Because I don't want to be afraid of death. Because there's no need for you to know." "What do you want? Would you like tea? It's cold. Let me get you another glass." Pyotr Stepanovich actually had taken up the teapot and was looking for an empty glass. Kirillov went to the cupboard and brought a clean glass. "I've just had lunch at Karamazinov's," observed his visitor. "There I listened to him talking, and perspired and got into a sweat running here. I'm fearfully thirsty."
"Drink. Cold tea is good."
Kirillov sat down on his chair again, and again fixed his eyes on the farthest corner. "The idea had arisen in the society," he went on in the same voice, "that I might be of use if I killed myself, and that when you get up some bit of mischief here, and they are looking for the guilty, I might suddenly shoot myself and leave a letter saying I did it all, so that you might escape suspicion for another year. For a few days, anyway. One day is precious."
"Good. So for that reason they asked me if I would, to wait. I said I'd wait till the society fixed the day, because it makes no difference to me."
"Yes, But remember that you bound yourself not to make up your last letter without me, and that in Russia you would be at my, well, at my disposition, that is, for that purpose only. I need hardly say in everything else, of course, you are free," Pyotr Stepanovitch added, almost amiably. "I didn't bind myself. I agreed because it makes no difference to me." "Good, good. I have no intention of wounding your vanity, but it's not a question of vanity. But remember that 120 thalers were collected for your journey, so you've taken money." "Not at all," Kirillov fired up. "The money was not on that condition. One doesn't take money for that." "People sometimes do." "That's a lie. I sent a letter from Petersburg, and in Petersburg I paid you 120 thalers. I put it in your hand, and it has been sent off there, unless you've kept it for yourself." "All right, all right. I don't dispute anything. It has been sent off. All that matters is that you are still of the same mind." "Exactly the same. When you come and tell me it's time, I'll carry it all out." "Will it be very soon?" "Not very many days. But remember, we'll make up the letter together, the same night." "The same day, if you like. You say I must take the responsibility for the manifestos on myself." "And something else, too. I am not going to make myself out responsible for everything." "What won't you be responsible for?" said Pyotr Stepanovitch again. "What I don't choose. That's enough. I don't want to talk about it any more." Pyotr Stepanovitch controlled himself and changed the subject. "To speak of something else," he began, "will you be with us this evening? It's Virginsky's name day. That's the pretext for our meeting." "I don't want to." "Do me a favour. Do come. You must. We must impress them by our number and our looks. You have a face, well, in one word, you have a fateful face." "You think so?" laughed Kirillov. "Very well, I'll come, but not for the sake of my face. What time is it?" "Oh, quite early, 6:30. And, you know, you can go in, sit down, and not speak to anyone, however many may be there. Only, I say, don't forget to bring pencil and paper with you." "What's that for?" "Why, it makes no difference to you, and it's my special request. You'll only have to sit still, speaking to no one, listen, and sometimes seem to make a note. You could draw something if you like." "What nonsense! What for?" "Why, since it makes no difference to you. You keep saying that it's just the same to you." "No. What for?" "Why, because that member of the society, the inspector, has stopped at Moscow. And I told some of them here that possibly the inspector may turn up tonight, and they'll think that you are the inspector. And as you've been here 3 weeks already, they'll be still more surprised." "Stage tricks. You haven't got an inspector in Moscow." "Well, suppose I haven't, damn him. What business is that of yours, and what bother will it be to you? You are a member of the society yourself." "Tell them I am the inspector. I'll sit still and hold my tongue. But I won't have the pencil and paper." "But why?" "I don't want to." Pyotr Stepanovitch was really angry. He turned positively green, but again he controlled himself. He got up and took his hat. "Is that fellow with you?" he brought out suddenly in a low voice. "Yes." "That's good. I'll soon get him away. Don't be uneasy." "I am not uneasy. He is only here at night. The old woman is in the hospital. Her daughter-in-law is dead. I've been alone for the last 2 days. I've shown him the place in the paling where you can take a board out. He gets through. No one sees." "I'll take him away soon." "He says he has got plenty of places to stay the night in." "That's rot. They are looking for him. But here he wouldn't be noticed. Do you ever get in to talk with him?" "Yes, at night. He abuses you tremendously. I've been reading the Apocalypse to him at night, and we have tea. He listened very, very eagerly the whole night." "Hang it all. You'll convert him to Christianity." "He is a Christian as he is. Don't be uneasy. He'll do the murder. Whom do you want to murder?" "No, I don't want him for that. I want him for something different. And does Shatov know about Petka?
I don't talk to Shatov, and I don't see him.
Is he angry?
No, we are not angry. Only we shun one another. We lay too long side by side in America.
I'm going to him directly.
As you like.
Stavrogin and I may come and see you from there about 10 o'clock.
Do.
I want to talk to him about something important. I say, make me a present of your ball. What do you want with it now? I want it for gymnastics, too. I'll pay you for it if you like.
You can take it without.
Pyotr Stepanovich put the ball in the back pocket of his coat.
But I'll give you nothing against Stavrogin, Kirillov muttered after his guest as he saw him out.
The latter looked at him in amazement, but did not answer. Kirillov's last words perplexed Pyotr Stepanovich extremely. He had not time yet to discover their meaning, but even while he was on the stairs of Shatov's lodging, he tried to remove all trace of annoyance and to assume an amiable expression. Shatov was at home and rather unwell. He was lying on his bed, though dressed. "What bad luck!" Pyotr Stepanovich cried out in the doorway. "Are you really ill?" The amiable expression of his face suddenly vanished. There was a gleam of spite in his eyes.
"Not at all." Shatov jumped up nervously. "I'm not ill at all. A little headache."
He was disconcerted. The sudden appearance of such a visitor positively alarmed him. "You mustn't be ill for the job I've come about," Pyotr Stepanovich began quickly, and, as it were, peremptorily. "Allow me to sit down." He sat down. "And you sit down again on your bedstead, that's right. There will be a party of our fellows at Virginsky tonight on the pretext of his birthday. It will have no political character, however, we've seen to that. I am coming with Nikolai Stavrogin. I would not, of course, have dragged you there, knowing your way of thinking at present, simply to save your being worried, not because we think you would betray us. But as things have turned out, you will have to go. You'll meet there the very people with whom we shall finally settle how you are to leave the society, and to whom you are to hand over what is in your keeping. We'll do it without being noticed. I'll take you aside into a corner. There'll be a lot of people, and there's no need for everyone to know. I must confess I've had to keep my tongue wagging on your behalf, but now I believe they've agreed, on condition you hand over the printing press and all the papers, of course. Then you can go where you please." Shatov listened, frowning and resentful. The nervous alarm of a moment before had entirely left him.
"I don't acknowledge any sort of obligation to give an account to the devil knows whom," he declared definitely. "No one has the authority to set me free."
"Not quite so. A great deal has been entrusted to you. You hadn't the right to break it off simply. Besides, you made no clear statement about it, so that you put them in an ambiguous position."
"I stated my position clearly by letter as soon as I arrived here."
"No, it wasn't clear," Pyotr Stepanovich retorted calmly. "I sent you a noble personality to be printed here, and meaning the copies to be kept here till they were wanted, and the two manifestos as well. You returned them with an ambiguous letter which explained nothing."
"I refused definitely to print them."
"Well, not definitely. You wrote that you couldn't. But you didn't explain for what reason. I can't doesn't mean I don't want to. It might be supposed that you were simply unable through circumstances. That was how they took it, and considered that you still meant to keep up your connection with the society, so that they might have entrusted something to you again, and so have compromised themselves. They say here that you simply meant to deceive them, so that you might betray them when you got hold of something important. I have defended you to the best of my powers, and have shown your brief note as evidence in your favour. But I had to admit on rereading those two lines that they were misleading and not conclusive."
"You kept that note so carefully, then?"
"My keeping it means nothing. I've got it still."
"Well, I don't care, damn it," Shatov cried furiously. "Your fools may consider that I've betrayed them if they like. What is it to me? I should like to see what you can do to me."
"Your name would be noted, and at the first success of the revolution, you would be hanged."
"That's when you get the upper hand and dominate Russia."
"You needn't laugh. I tell you again, I stood up for you. Anyway, I advise you to turn up today. Why waste words through false pride? Isn't it better to part friends? In any case, You'll have to give up the printing press and the old type and papers. That's what we must talk about.
I'll come, Shatov muttered, looking down thoughtfully.
Pyotr Stepanovich glanced askance at him from his place.
Will Stavrogin be there?
Shatov asked suddenly, raising his head.
He is certain to be.
Ha ha!
Again, they were silent for a minute. Shatov grinned disdainfully and irritably.
And that contemptible, noble personality of yours that I wouldn't print here. Has it been printed? He asked.
Yes.
To make the schoolboys believe that Herzen himself had written it in your album?
Yes, Herzen himself. Again, they were silent for 3 minutes. At last, Shatov got up from the bed.
Go out of my room. I don't care to sit with you.
I'm going, Pyotr Stepanovich brought out with positive alacrity, getting up at once. Only one word. Kirillov is quite alone in the lodge now, isn't he? Without a servant.
Quite alone. Get along. I can't stand being in the same room with you.
Well, you are a pleasant customer now, Pyotr Stepanovich reflected gaily as he went out into the street. And you'll be pleasant this evening, too, and that just suits me. Nothing better could be wished. Nothing better could be wished. The Russian god himself seems helping me.